Hello
There.
Welcome back to Star Wars in a Galaxy, watching all the Star Wars we can get our hands on. I'm Jacob.
I'm Eli.
And today we're coming at you with episode number 31 of Star Wars in a Galaxy. We're continuing our it's not chronological right now. The rewatch is no longer chronological.
I mean, it never was.
But it will be again
soon. It hasn't been for a while.
But
because remember, we fucked it up with Bad Batch and we did all sorts of shit.
We broke like our own number one.
It is as chronological as George Santos is Jewish, which is, it's not. However much it claims to be, it's not.
We spend as much time jumping around as he spent money on OnlyFans. That's what we'll say.
Exactly.
So today we're continuing with our incomplete look at Star Wars Young Jedi Adventures, which is set during the early days of the High Republic era of Star Wars, a few hundred years before the original movies, before the Battle of Yavin.
If I may, I'm actually you right now. It's technically, you're right that it's in the early days of a certain part of the High Republic era. The earliest days are actually about 150 years before this.
Oh, really?
The High Republic for those, before this.
Oh, I see. Okay. I was going to say, I know it's more than 150 years.
It's about 380. It's about 380 before Yavin. So what they did, and we haven't talked a lot about High Republic on this show because I don't think Jake's gotten into it. And I've only read Light of the Jedi, half of Rising Storm, and the Phase 1 run of the comics. But I know a lot about it just from research and doing, and having a lot of friends of mine, Connor Chahiti, Michael McCoy, friends of the show, are very into the High Republic, so I hear a lot about it from them. So what I can tell you is that the High Republic is... Phase 1, which started release early 2021, it does take place around this time. This is supposed to take place right before Phase 1. Phase 2 is about 150 years earlier, which started releasing, I want to say, like, mid to late 2022. When it was Path of Deceit, let's check. Path of Deceit was October 22, and then Phase 3 is like a few years later. Let's look at when Phase 3 takes place. Phase 3 takes place, first book of Phase 3. Phase 3 takes place a few years after Phase 1, 229 BBY, and that started with the Eye of Darkness releasing back in November. And we will soon finish that, and of course, finish up the High Republic era with a TV show. Of course, we don't do much talking about current Star Wars stuff, but of course, we have both seen the trailer for The Acolyte, and that we're both very excited about it. And of course, we will cover Acolyte on In a Galaxy. Not for a while, but we will. Eventually, we will cover The Acolyte on The Galaxy. I'm very excited for it. And I'll probably be on some streams and some episode reviews going forward. And hopefully, Jake can join me for for The Acolyte releasing 100%. When it releases this summer. But let's get to Young Jedi Adventures here. So here's how we did this. We, as Jacob mentioned, we're only doing a select number. So here's what we did. The last episode, we left off with the Jedi and the Thief, the first half of episode 7. We did not do the second half of episode 7. We skipped episode 8 completely. We did both halves of episode 9, The Princess and the Jedi and Kai's Bad Day. And we skipped episodes 10 and 11, both of them. And then we did both parts of episode 12, Off the Rails and the Thieves of Tharnaka.
Starting off with The Princess and the Jedi, Nash is... We're back on Tanu, and Nash is totally freaking out because she has to fly the Princess Anaya to her father's ceremony very unexpectedly, a very last-minute sort of thing. So she's very nervous, and she's asking the Jedi to accompany her because she's not used to escorting royalty, and she really wants to make a good impression. But right as they take off, we realize that Tabor Valdorn, of course, is watching and plotting. While they're taking the princess, Tabor shoots them down, and they have to repair the ship. Nash, sorry, time out. I'm hearing some echoing on your end. Is everything normal?
Oh, maybe that was the, let's check. Ah, yes.
Yeah, all better now. Now you're muted. Now I can't hear you.
There, that should.
All right. Yeah, wait. Yeah, sounds good now.
Okay,
do I need to should I restart that? Is that going to go into the recording?
Yeah, you should. Sorry about that. Yeah.
We open back on Tanu. Nash has to fly the Princess Anaya to her father's ceremony. She's very nervous, feeling very nervous about escorting royalty, really wanted to make a good impression. So she calls up Liss, Nebs, and Kai, her Jedi friends, to accompany her. And she's acting very strange, trying to put on a posh accent, do all sorts of things to try and impress the young princess. However, Tabor Valdorn is, of course, as always, watching and plotting in the shadows. And while they are en route to the ceremony, he pops out in his ship, and after a brief chase, he shoots them down, and they have to stop and repair the ship. Nash tries to lead the way, but she does not listen to any of the advice or the suggestions or the offerings of help of the Princess Anaya, which does get them into some trouble when Tabor steals Anaya's present for her father. So Anaya gets on the pirate ship and flies off. However, she uses her technical expertise, since she's, as we find out in the story, she's very into spaceships and mechanics and things like that. And she disables the ship and uses her technical expertise and ability to manipulate the different doors and systems of the ship. She uses that to help get the present back. And in the end, they make it to her father's ceremony. Next up, in Kai's bad day, Kai wakes up very late. He wakes up to his alarm clock, but he's horribly late, and he has completely missed the Jedi training mission that he was supposed to go on with Liss and Nebs, the temple. And he tries to do some training with the blaster droid, but it really doesn't go too well. It really doesn't go too well at all, and he gets very frustrated. And Master Zia tries to comfort him and give him some words of advice. And he ends up being sent by her with Nash on a mission to Tatooine to find Maitro Zala, a hyperspace prospector who is a friend of the Jedi, and bring him a part. I think a hyperdrive part. I forget what it's called exactly. Do you remember?
Yeah, I don't remember. No, I don't remember.
Unimportant. It's fine. They have to bring him apart. So they get sent to Tatooine. On the way there, they fly through, or Nash lets Kai pilot the ship through what looks like Beggar's Canyon to try and cheer him up. However, this leads them into a giant sandstorm, and while trying to escape the sandstorm, Kai accidentally ejects the packages that they were supposed to deliver. And when they go looking for the packages, they realize that they've been taken by Jawas. So while trying to get the packages back, they have a miscommunication with the Jawas, and the Jawas take the droid RJ. So they get on board the Jawa Sandcrawler, the Jedi and Kai and Nash. They get on the Sandcrawler, but they get chased around by the Jawas. And eventually they mention the name Maitro Zala, and we realize that the Jawas are friends of Maitro Zala, and he mediates the return of RJ and buying back all the parts, and everything is a-okay in the end.
In Off the Rails, the Jedi are transporting some strong Tanu wood from the trees. It's very strong and durable. Two people building homes on the other side of Tanu. They're escorting the wood as it's being taken on a train. But who's been messing everything up? It's been Tabor all along. And of this course. Does not stop here. It does not stop here. Tabor intercepts the train and fights the Jedi. But the two groups get separated, with Tabor and Kai on one side, on one car, and Nubs, Liss, EB3, and Pord on another car. And Kai and Tabor's car stops while the other car keeps going. Kai and Tabor must work together. They eventually find a manual way of trying to push the train car along as they debate the philosophies of the Jedi with the pirates, with Tabor's own philosophy.
eventually Tabor finds a power source, and Kai trusts him to connect the train car up to the power source, at which point they take off. Unfortunately, the train car is going too fast and would collide with the other train car. EB3, Pord, Liss, and Nubs also decide to work together to slow the cars down, at which point Tabor tries yet again to steal the wood back. Kai manages to convince him that it's not worth it, and the thieves leave empty-handed, at which point the Jedi deliver the wood safely to their destination. In The Thieves of Tharnaka, the Jedi Younglings and OGLC are on the planet of Tharnaka, where they are trying to get an important relic of the Tharnakan culture called the Story Stone. Right in front of them, however, the Story Stone is stolen by a group of thieves. They try to follow these thieves, and they quickly find out that this group of thieves is actually led by Ace Callisto from The Jedi and the Thief, a friend of Zia's and now Kai's, along with her two partners, Ishbal Ekwesh and Jubba Jinx. They quickly discover that Ishbal is actually a Tharnakan who they thought to be extinct. And OGLC quickly apologizes for trying to steal a relic that meant so much to the Tharnakan people. Ishbal accepts, but Tuba, while all of them are talking, steals the Story Stone and tries to make a run for it, wanting to sell it on the black market. Ace, Ishbal, the Younglings, and OGLC engage in a long chase with him, at which point they eventually capture him and take the stone back, at which point they give the Story Stone back to Ishbal as he gets yet another story to add to the Story Stone to tell his fellow Tharnakans about the Jedi who helped him get the stone back for his people. All right. Four very different... I always struggle on what to call these episode lits, shorts, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah. I have a hard time calling them shorts because there is literally another series on Disney Plus that are actually the Young Jedi Adventure shorts.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that there's one that's actual shorts. I'm like, there's more than one. YJA shorts, Resistance shorts, Rebel shorts, Visions, and then I think you could call Tales of the Jedi shorts as well.
Yeah. I think you could. So, anyways, The Princess and the Jedi, where do you want to start with this one? Because the meat of this is really about listening to voices even when they're unexpected.
And I also think it's about power. The idea of, and when we see when I says this, when you're a princess, people want to do everything for you. People in power often have assistants or hirees who do things for them, which is fine if they're treated fairly and get a good, you know, salary and benefits for their labor. But if you're having everything done for you, then how will you get the experiences that are part of being human? And I think that's a little of what Anaya is going through a little bit. She says multiple times, "That's not, I never get to fly these things." And this is her passion. But her parents, who are her royal parents, who are almost certainly overprotective of her, don't want her to get hurt, so they don't let her take the risks that she wants to.
It's very similar to Princess Leia in Princess of Alderaan, for instance. I think you're absolutely right. I think, as well, we see how, even though she's, and to your point about power and in a broader sense of the kind of the stereotypical or rather the conventional roles that we tend to prescribe people just based off their title or their job description or whatnot, we see Nash, even though she's really desperate to make a good impression with Anaya, we see Nash kind of perpetrate the exact same thing. We see her discount Anaya over and over again until she learns her lesson because she wants to treat her like a princess. And she says, "Oh, we'll take care of it. Don't worry about this. You just sit tight and we won't cause any trouble for you." Not realizing that that's exactly what they need is Anaya's expertise.
And
which brings it back to my point.
Yeah. And she even says when they crash the Crimson Firehawk, Nash apologizes for all the trouble getting off world to her. And she goes, no, this is the most fun I've had in ages.
Yeah.
And it really makes being you think.
If being shot down by a pirate becomes fun. Yeah, it makes you think. It absolutely does. For this one, I didn't really... This was the main meat of this episode, was the message, absolutely. I think.
The message about power. I think Anaya just generally is a really great character. I think she's capable. She's smart. Like, she is, like, I think there is often a trope in Star Wars, which I think is there for good reason, because this is more often than not true in Star Wars, of royals who are weak leaders and don't care about their people. But she does not seem like that. She seems like she is a down-to-earth, like, she hasn't let privilege go to her head.
Yeah, I mean, she's very much the prototypical modern Disney princess, where the role is being you could say that this started with there, where the role is being remade and inverted or reversed from what it originally was, where now the message is that being a princess in that sense doesn't mean as a character that you have no agency, that you're waiting for the male characters, the male protagonist usually, to save you or to take you where you need to be, but rather that you have a great deal of courage, cunning, skill, whatever it may be, and you're not afraid to use it. So I think that in that sense, she's absolutely embodying the newer idea of what it can mean to be a princess.
I actually really like your idea that she is, I think she is the closest Star Wars has ever gotten to a Disney princess. And I do not mean that in a negative way at all. I think that's something really interesting. I'll give you a spoiler for her, which is that we never see her again in this season, which is a bummer for me, because I really like her character.
She has a lot of potential as a character, I think. It's interesting to see someone who challenges the main core. She challenges their perceptions of themselves. Specifically, she's challenging. This is really Nash's episode. It's her and Nash's episode for various reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. Nine, both of these shorts are in many ways about Nash. And as she's coming into her own and learning a lot of the lessons that the Jedi beside her are learning in her own way. Because she can't use them. She can't learn them with the power of the mystical energy field that she can't use. I just air quoted, because we all know, I have to keep telling myself this, because this is still a new idea for me, even though I recognize it's been in Star Wars from the beginning. I'm still trying to get used to being like, everyone's technically force sensitive, it's just you have to be open to it and blah blah blah. But yeah, we use the shorthand, whatever. But yeah, no, both these shorts are about Nash learning important lesson. Kai's Bad Day is a Kai episode, but it's also a Nash episode, because she learns some valuable do's and don'ts about exploring the galaxy.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think most importantly, the lesson, and clearly the lesson that they're trying to give to the audience and the target audience, is not only, in simple terms, don't judge a book by its cover, but really in trying to do what she thinks she's supposed to do, Nash kind of plays into the very dynamic that is very harmful and frustrating to Anaya by trying to give her the quote-unquote royal treatment, rolling out the red carpet. She ends up harming the whole team. And it's not even that she makes the choice. It's only when Anaya takes things into her own hands and gives Nash no choice, does Nash say, oh, okay, you can be a princess and do everything that I do and have these other skill sets, these other knowledge sets, expanding what that means. So yeah, I was a fan of this episode. These are short and sweet, but this was a good one for sure.
No, I think this is definitely my least favorite of the four, but that doesn't mean I hate it. Just I like it, and I like all the other stuff better. Do you want to get to Kai's Bad Day?
Kai's Bad Day. Oh, man. This is a universal story. Yeah. Zia says, we all have days like this.
We do.
It's universal.
And here's the thing. When I heard Kai's bad day, I remember when I read that for the first time, I think the literal description of the episode is Kai has a bad day or something generic ass like that. I'm like, oh, this is probably going to be just an insignificant little episode. And Kai starts out being late. I'm like, oh, whatever. And then Zia's talking with him, and they're like, she's like, actually, I have a mission for you, and Nash can come too. And it's on Tatooine. And the minute she said Tatooine, I'm like, shit, this is going to be a good episode. I love this episode. I love this specific story just for a bunch of reasons, but mostly because, look, and am I using this episode to make a point a little bit about Star Wars and Star Wars fandom? Sure, I will admit that I am, but I think it's a point that needs to be made, here's what it is. I love the planet of Tatooine, and I'm tired of pretending that I don't. Like, I'm tired of, like, people, like, this is something we heard all along with the fucking, with Mandalorian, when Mandalorian did this, and then Book of Boba, and then Kenobi. Oh, Star Wars has a Tatooine problem. I don't want to keep going back to Tatooine. Tatooine's awesome, man. It has so many interesting cultures and landmarks that are instantly recognizable as Star Wars. And we were going there a lot less than people thought we were, first of all. And second of all, most importantly, Tatooine needs to, like, we need to start appreciating Tatooine again. And legit, I do really feel like I gained a new appreciation for Tatooine from this short in a very specific way. Because here's the thing. Jacob, let's play a little game of word association.
All right.
Tell me the first five words that come to your head when you think of Tatooine.
Sand, hot, Jawa, Luke, Skywalker.
You got one of them that I was you got one of the one that I was looking for, actually.
You were looking for sand?
No, I was looking for Skywalker. What is Tatooine without the Skywalkers? Think about it. Every other time we've seen Tatooine, in some way it can connect back to the Skywalkers.
Yeah.
What is Tatooine without the Skywalkers? What are the traits of Tatooine that cause it to be memorable? You can have, we got a lot of them in this episode. We did the Jawas, we did the Sandcrawler, we did Beggar's Canyon, we did all of that iconic stuff. But remember, of course, we don't know exactly who Shmi's parents were and how far the Skywalker line specifically goes back, but we will not meet a known Skywalker in the galaxy that we know of for at least another, like, 200 years. And it's just really interesting to me to see how we do Tatooine without doing Skywalkers.
Seems pretty similar to how we do it with Skywalkers, if I'm being honest, from my perspective.
Yes, but also here's some stuff to, like, consider. And we don't know the state of Mos Eisley right now. So, like,
that's true, yeah. Mos Eisley, like, could be a very different place.
Could be a very different place. Chalmers Cantina could be there, could be not, could not be there. Certainly if it is, Wooher wouldn't be the bartender. We don't know what Jabba's entourage looks like. A lot of the things that we encounter on Tatooine actually have to do with people who live there and not about the natural features. This also combines with, by the way, and I understand if I'm making this a bit of a rant on my part, and I understand that. I'll just say one thing about this, which is, look, what's the lesson of this fucking episode? Look for the good. Something that I'm begging constantly Star Wars fans to do. Sure, you're on Tatooine again, but what do you like about it? Come on. It is so ridiculous sometimes, I feel like, that Star Wars fans are legitimately ignoring the messages that Star Wars is giving them. But yeah, no, that's my mini rant over about this episode.
Okay.
What do you got for this episode?
I think, as far as Tatooine goes, I don't have a whole... I don't have a whole lot to say. I think, if anything, my issue with Tatooine, and this can be, and I know that this can be explained away pretty easily, so I'm not super stressing about this, but it seems ever since, especially with the more recent portrayals of Tatooine, such as in Book of Boba Fett, is Tatooine this backwater, this remote backwater planet that no one wants to go to? Or is it this really valuable bustling hub of commerce and underworld crime and activity. It seems like sometimes Star Wars can't quite make up its mind. And I know there's a lot of time in there and it's a whole planet. Ultimately, again, I'm not too worried about it. But yes, regardless, it is interesting to see what Tatooine means to different people. It seems like to anyone who's a Jedi or a soon-to-be Jedi, Tatooine is the last place. Or an ex-Jedi, Tatooine is the last place that you want to be. But if you are not Force-sensitive, people like that seem to, characters like that seem to like Tatooine quite a bit more.
Yeah. I'll also, we'll talk about, you mentioned in your summary, of course, Beggar's Canyon, which I thought was a really great detail. Like, just to see the, I always like seeing familiar Star Wars stuff in this animation style, because, of course, this animation style is new to Star Wars. And it's interesting to see, we've seen Yoda, we've seen lightsabers, we've seen what have you, Electra stabs. But here we get some, like, real concrete Macquarie Star Wars designs. Tatooine, the Jawas, Beggar's Canyon, all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
It is very fun to see some of these. I do agree, though. It is very fun to see some of these Tatooine touchstone, Beggar's Canyon, which Beggar's Canyon almost talked about more than shown in most of Star Wars, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And
Jawas, obviously.
The Jawas are great. The Jawas are great. I don't know if this was an intentional reference, but remember when Nash screamed at the Jawas and then they all hid?
Yeah.
And then she turned the corner and then there were like twice as many of them.
You thinking about the Han Solo on the Death Star?
Actually, no.
Really? Because that's what it reminded me of.
That's a good reference, but no, I was thinking of something a little bit more reachy, actually.
What's that?
Which is, the Sand People are easily startled, but they will be back, and in greater numbers.
Oh. Yeah, I'm not going to lie, I didn't see that, but that's a good... That's an interesting connection, though. That's an interesting connection. And one thing I do like about this episode, in terms of the Jawas, is that we see them in a different light. We always see the Jawas as they're thieves, they're swindlers, they have a lot of shady, dishonest business practices, notably in Kenobi, for example. But
that was just Tika. We don't know. Don't put Tika on all Jawas.
I know, but I'm saying lore wise, think about it's heavily.
Don't be Jawas, Jacob.
Eli, listen to me. It's heavily implied in almost every Star Wars medium except for this one, once you finish trolling, that Jawas like to swindle. They like to steal things and then sell them back to the owners. They like to try and cut crappy deals, cut corners. But I like that we have someone, Micho Zala. Am I saying that right? I watched the episode yesterday, so I can't quite remember. Micho Zala, it's nice to see he speaks the Jawa language, which I think is awesome. We're moving beyond mutual bilingualism, although that is very cool and obviously a signature part of Star Wars. I like that we're moving beyond that. I like that we're seeing someone have a different relationship with the Jawas. I like when species aren't necessarily pigeonholed. This isn't Tolkien. Yeah. There aren't good and evil races. But I like that we see someone establish a more, maybe a bit more of a mutually respectful, mutually beneficial relationship with the Jawas. I always like that.
Yeah, no, I like that as well. I think that there's something else about the Jawas that I was just about to say. Oh, yeah, no, it was about Micho Zala. Micho Zala is voiced by Noshir Dalal. Good job. I'm excited for Noshir because he finally got a good guy role after his bad guy roles as Edmus Rampart and Bodacuna fame. Good for him.
That's some range. Some range, by the way.
That's some great serious range. Bode Rampart and Micho Zala is crazy. My guy's killing it. Yeah, so good on him. I will also, of course, say that did you take a peek at his home?
A bit.
Did it remind you of anything?
Not in specific. I don't know what you're getting at here.
Oh, it looked a lot like Ben's house.
Yeah, no.
Like, I'm not saying it's the same house. I don't think it. I don't think it was the same house. I think it was like that, I think it's the same style.
Yeah, like, I mean that's the desert architecture.
I think it was a I think that was a nice little homage to Ben's house in A New Hope. I almost half expected to go in and hear your father wanted to have this when you were old enough. Of course, this being he opens the crate, he reaches in, he pulls out a beer cerveza cristal.
Oh God!
Anyway,
cerveza cristal. I would wrong target audience for that ad. If you're trying to advertise Chilean beer, on definitely someone's getting fired in the marketing. Someone at an advertising agency somewhere is getting fired if you're showing Cerveza Cristal in Young Jedi. If you show Kai Bright Star reaching for a Cerveza Cristal, I don't think that's gonna go over.
I'll make the edit. Well, I will make the edit.
To be honest. We don't promote underage drinking here at Star Wars in a Galaxy. We do not condone such behaviors. I wanted to turn, while we're still on Kai's bad day, I wanted to turn to a couple of details that I enjoyed. First of all, even Jedi have alarm clocks, hollow alarm clocks, by the way.
Yep.
I thought that was a fun detail. I always like things like that, the little world building aspect. Secondly, let's talk about the Jedi slang and expletives. So I love that Kai uses blaster bolts as an expletive, because of course the Jedi would say blaster bolts to lament something bad happening. They're uncivilized and all that. I just wanted to shout that out.
That's a good point. I thought it was like a general expletive, but it makes sense it would be used specifically.
It makes sense it would be used by the... Have you heard a non... This is maybe the first time that I've heard it, or that I can recall.
I've heard people say blast.
We've definitely heard people... Oh, yeah, blast is
an expletive. But that, I think that's the closest.
Yeah. And also, in addition, wizard flip, Kai...
So wizard Liss, Annie.
Liss hopping on the wizard train. I think we get a wizard in. Is it off the rails? We get a wizard as well. We get another wizard in one of the later episodes.
Yeah, I don't remember. I do know where the other two wizards are, of course. We gotta talk about our guy Kitster in Phantom Menace.
Yeah, of course.
And then of course, infamously in the Book of Boba Fett, where when Din touches down after taking his N1 for a test flight. Pelimoto, that's how it went. He goes, wizard.
I feel like that, look, as much as I love the original wizard from The Phantom Menace, I really think, I don't know who wrote that episode, but the writers and directors of The Mandalorian, or sorry, The Book of Boba Fett, when they had Din Djarin pull out the wizard in, what was it, 2000, in 2022 or 2021?
2022.
Right. The year of our Lord, 2022, the common era. And we pulled out the wizard. That truly was the wizard heard round the world.
It really was.
Shout out to Din Djarin.
Shout out to John. Shout out to John. John Favreau, salute to you on that one.
Anyways, that's all I've got for this. I just wanted to have...
Absolutely. Those are some fun details.
Fun details. I love those.
Always love, of course, any, like, they do that transition. I forget exactly when it is, but they cut to a shot of the twin sons and they pan down. Like, always gonna never get enough of that. Cool. Great setting the stage of, hey, we're on Tatooine. And the final thing I want to say is that it was nice to hear Rutini again.
It was nice to hear Rutini again. I agree. Yeah. Gotta have love for the Jawas.
Yeah. Mostly, I just really like this episode because... Tatooine to me is very heavily associated with nostalgia, so
I agree,
and I think that this episode really handles it pretty well.
You know what this reminded me of, Eli, this episode, especially just something about the Jawas, their voices in this episode, this really reminded me of an old game from long ago, not that long ago, but it reminded me of Disney Infinity.
I was wondering if you were gonna...
Everything about this, the animation, the aesthetics, the vibe, it really reminded me of Disney Infinity, which I think the Star Wars part of Disney Infinity, especially Tatooine, and also Hoth, but especially Tatooine, very underrated in terms of just the whole world that they create and the way that you can explore it. It's really
unexpected and surprising, the execution of Tatooine for a video game like Disney Infinity. So, yeah,
for those of you who are not as familiar with Disney Infinity, I'm also sorry to report that you can't play it anymore because Disney took it down.
Fully shut down now?
Oh, yeah. I can still play it.
You can't play online. You can't. No new updates.
No.
No. Okay. Okay. We should definitely fire up Disney Infinity for some old time's sake.
No, I've legitimately. Disney Infinity was one of the first games I ever got on my Xbox. I've played through all three of those campaigns, the Clone Wars, the original trilogy, and the Force Awakens. I played through them literally dozens of times. More than I played through maybe anything else. More than I played any other game, maybe other than Minecraft.
Yeah. Look, like the maps.
Yeah, it's great.
The combat mechanics, it's all so much better than it has any right to be for Star Wars in the Disney Infinity game.
It has, absolutely does.
It has any right to be. It is so much fun.
It's fantastic. Also, Sabine's incredibly overpowered.
Yes. Agreed.
But, yeah, let's go on to Off the Rails. When I saw this episode to Stripton for the first time and it said Tabor robs a train, I'm like, oh, this is going to be good.
Look, I have to say I'm a little disappointed that we go from, and I am being, I permit myself to be facetious here, that we went from militant eco-terrorist, if I'm allowed to say that, maybe eco-terrorist is the wrong word, but we went from hardcore environmentalist in the previous episode to somewhat pro-logging, I need timber. I'm having fun here, but
yeah, no, I get
I was
your
not
point.
Expecting the pro, I was not expecting the logging lobby to come out so strong in this
I don't
episode.
Think this was really the logging lobby. I think this was the, again, using the resources to help people. If you remember, of course, Tabor wants to do what with the wood?
Sell it.
Yeah. Once again, proving that the real villain of Young Jedi Adventures is, as always, capitalism.
Capitalism.
It is. No, we'll really start to get political with the next one. Not that this one isn't, but the next one, I have some stuff to say about Thieves of Tharnaka. But yeah, no, I love this episode. Anytime where we get to see Tabor and Kai go at it, especially now after Kai has had a little bit of a change of heart about Tabor in The Jedi and the Thief.
Yeah.
I love the whole, like, they both are like, they're both so annoyed. They're both like, oh,
yeah.
we have to fight each other again.
Oh, no.
Again? Yeah. It's not like it's not fun. It's not angry anymore. It's just exasperated. It is this fucking guy. And I appreciate that. But, of course, where the episode really gets interesting is when they get separated. And where Kai and Tabor are alone and start talking to each other. And I think there's some really fantastic dialogue here. And just general ideas about each other. First of all, there's of course that, like, there's that Tabor asks Kai, don't you get tired of following rules all the time? And there's something about that. Now, look, a lot of my comments about this episode, on all of my notes, I am actually going to be unable to share with everybody this episode. Because too many of them relate to a certain thing that is revealed about Tabor later on at the end of the season. But if
And I very much don't know.
Yeah, and he very much does not.
You will never forget it.
I've been saving a lot of notes from many different episodes about Tabor once Jacob learns the twist about Tabor. But this one is probably peak among them, honestly, just because you'll see. Just because you'll see.
All right, we'll see.
Yeah, I think that Tabor. I think that this episode very much, I think, does for Tabor in a lot of ways what the Jedi and the Thief did for Kai. I think it flips it on his head. I think Tabor now gets to see that Kai is just trying to do his best as well. That Kai is an actual person with dreams and hopes and fears. And I don't think Tabor really ever considered that.
Yeah, I think we see him, his world is obviously, his worldview is incredibly challenged. And at the end, his world gets exploded. And he clearly is trying very hard to play it cool. But like, when it's just the fact that when Kaya says, just logs are needed to build homes for people who need housing, people are in need of homes. He goes, wait, what? I knew that. I don't care. Come on. He obviously just is a young guy, a young kid, a tween, possibly, not even thinking about the consequences of his actions in the slightest. Yeah. And we start to see him open up. Kai starts opening up him up to a bigger world in these episodes.
Yeah, I've talked as much. I've talked my head off already, and Jacob, I'm going to be more annoying about this as the season goes on about Tabe Redemption, as I've dubbed it. But no, we get to see, and that's another one of the themes of this episode, is that Kai literally says it. I think it's one of the best explanations of this Star Wars theme, which is like pivotal to Star Wars, by the way, that I've ever heard. Just because you've done bad things before doesn't mean you can't choose to do good. It's that simple.
Yeah.
That's our choices that make us who we are.
It's a fundamental part of Star Wars. Absolutely.
It's why redemption carries such a heavy weight in a lot of Star Wars stories, whether it is Anakin or Ben or Crosshair or Tabor or what have you. You always have the potential for change. You always have the potential to be better. And I think that's great. I love that kids are getting that Star Wars theme right off the bat with this.
Something that I like as well, maybe it is a bit, maybe it's a bit of, not cliche, it's a bit of a trope, but we get to the point even now where Tabor, we see that he wants to do the right thing. He doesn't want to live life like he's been living, because we can hear it. We hear it in his voice, in the way that he talks about it. He's constantly like, I can do whatever I want, whenever I feel like it, yada, yada, yada. But he's trying desperately to convince himself that this isn't a unsustainable, lonely, unfulfilling way to live his life. Because that's sure what it seems like to me.
Yeah, there is a question of who are you trying to convince? Don't you get tired of following rules about this all the time? Tabor, is this about Kai or is this about you?
There it
is. Yeah, it's incredibly well done, I think. And one of the things I like with this season with regards to, again, what I'm calling Tabor Redemption, is that it is not a simple process. It's explained in one episode. This is a constant thing that we're constantly working towards. It's not going to happen all at once. It could be very easy to just have one time, Tabor's good now. But no, they take their time with it. They show the missteps along the way. You got to take a few steps backward before you know how to go forward.
That's how life is. It's not necessarily, we're good now.
But they could have totally done that.
Yeah, they could have done that, but I think they didn't. And even especially in a children's show like this, it shows what they're trying to do.
Yeah, it shows real sophistication.
That they take the time. Yeah, I think that's a good, that's the word I've been looking for. This is very much a kid's show. Now, these are short and sweet episodes. They're simple and they're to the point, but they are sophisticated. They're not just drivel for the, it's not just, and that's good. And I like that.
Yeah.
And I think this episode is a great example of that.
Yeah, no, it is. I think I love the action in this episode. There's some great dueling action between Kai and Tabor. I always love seeing them fight just because I like the lightsaber moves and the electric shaft moves are cool. I said in my notes, the action was great and themes were greater. And I believe that 100%.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. Ready to get to the Thieves of Tharnaka, or as I call it, Young Jedi Adventures last week, tonight.
Let's do it, yeah.
Remember when I told you that there was an episode that reminded me of a Last Week Tonight episode?
Is it this one?
It's this one. John Oliver did a great piece on Last Week Tonight a while ago. I think this was like a year or two ago. On museums.
Mm.
And how a lot and how a lot of museums get the things they display. Hint, theft. Or if not outright theft, at least theft by another name. Let's see where this is. I'm gonna check very quickly where this got. This was in their, this was in season 9 that really do. If you have Max, as it's called, now, and you haven't watched last week, like a great look at the problems with American society, and like we're recording this on a Sunday, which is when it releases, and I'm so excited for the release tonight. We'll see what it is. Let's see what crazy shit they come up with to do this time. The last time they were trying to bribe a Supreme Court justice completely legally. Great. That bribe, by the way, completely failed. But anyway. So, yeah, OGLC is back. OGLC is back. I think that this is... I think we said last time, or not last time, a few times ago with Isabella, that OGLC will be in three ones of these. Yeah, he's in three of these, and we've seen two of them so far. The next one we'll see in a few weeks. And OGLC and the Younglings are quickly... I love that very quickly. I don't know if this reminded you of this. It probably didn't, because I know I'm like, I love specific soft spot for this franchise that I know you don't exactly. But the way they were like trying to, they were cutting all these corners, going down through an ancient temple of some sort or an ancient building of some sort. This felt very Indiana Jones to me. And especially that shot of the story stone on that little pedestal that it was on, that felt to me like an exact copy of the fertility idol at the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Whenever you have the archaeology, the archaeological heist-ish angle in a Lucasfilm property, you're gonna have that Indiana Jones homage. That's a given. That's requisite at this point.
Yeah, it was.
So you're
like,
absolutely right about that.
It felt so like pointed that I almost half expected to hear in the soundtrack. And just a little flourish in there, just to see if we were paying attention. No, but yeah, by the way, jealous of Kai this episode, because Nubs gets scared by the lightning and jumps right into his arms, and God, if that could only be me. Anyway, this is truly my representation of that meme, that one meme. If anything happens to him, I will kill everyone in this room, and then myself.
Yeah, we love our Nubs.
We love our guy, but of course it's stolen. And of course, they automatically think that the people who take the stone are bad. That's what they automatically think. They automatically think that just because they took the stone means they're bad.
Yeah, I think that's the lesson here, which is that don't be too set in your own beliefs, because obviously they think that taking it to the temple is the right thing to do, until they realize, wait, we've got an actual person of who this is. Tharnakan. That's it. That's what I was going to say. We've got a Tharnakan right here. What are we doing? And I think, as young Jedi Adventures tends to do, we see what happens if people do the right thing when confronted with an opportunity by an opportunity to not just do the wrong thing, but when confronted with an opportunity to rectify their mistakes. Yeah. Obviously, in the real, if we're really talking about artifacts and this kind of archival work, oftentimes that's a very difficult and arduous process, when it's steeped in all the dynamics of colonialism and neocolonialism, and it gets very intense very quickly.
Yeah. I remember seeing this episode for the first time, and I was just shocked that it went there. I'm shocked that Young Jedi Adventures went there. And this is, by the way, not an exception to the rule. This is the rule. This is not an anomaly. This is setting a precedent. And of course, once we see the crew, we get Ace Callisto back, which, by the way, another spoiler for you, Jacob. That's it for Ace Callisto this season. We're done with her, which is a shame because I really like Tignataro as Ace Callisto. And I think she got a lot better in this episode, too, because she actually, I think Kai, in a very real way, actually did help to redeem her a little bit.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
And then we get her two sidekicks, who are both interesting for different reasons. First, I want to get to Ishbola Quesh, who is the actual Tharnakan, voiced by Mr. Dave Fannoy, who's a prominent voice actor who's voiced many things. But of course, what I know him for, and what you and most of our listeners will probably know him for, is Pongkrel.
Yeah. Of Fuck Pongkrel.
Pongkrel fame. But anyway, that's Dave Fannoy, who voices Ishbola. And then, of course, we get Tuba Jinx, who, as soon as we see those tendrils, you're like, oh my god, are we getting a Gungan in this show? And let me tell you, we got a Gungan in this show. That was so unexpected to me. I think it is a...
It was a lovely surprise.
To see a Gungan. And also, especially to see a Gungan who wasn't so great. We talked about Jawas earlier. Most of the Gungans we've seen have been good guys. This Gungan, all of the Gungans we've seen are good guys. I'm purposely leaving out Rish Lu on this one because he sucks.
Evil Gungan.
Yeah. Tuba Jinx is the first evil Gungan, not Rish Lu, because again, as previously established, he sucks. But and then of course we get our grand reveal of the ultimate villain of the episode shortly after, when capitalism goes off and tries to sell the stone. Sorry, Tuba goes to try and sell it. Sorry, I misspoke. I said capitalism, not Tuba. I meant Tuba is what I absolutely meant, not capitalism.
He's the quintessential grave robber.
He's just trying to sell it. That's the only one. It's the green stuff, and it's not, whatever color money is in the galaxy far away. That's all he cares about. But this stone has actual value to the Tharnakan people, who have the phrase I'm about to utter, probably the first time this phrase has ever been uttered in the history of humankind. The Tharnakan diaspora has been through a lot.
That's definitely a first.
Yeah, I'm serious. They suffered through the flood,
They're just trying to get their story stone back.
They're literally linked to the mythology of their culture. In a very real way, this is if somebody tried to steal, like, Greek mythology, or Tongva mythology from the Native Americans who used to live in the Southern California area, or the Shoshone people who used to live, I think, in the area that we now know as Wyoming, or any other indigenous peoples from around the world. Like, it is a theft of stories, which is significant. Like, and of course, a lot of those stories have been lost over the years due to colonization, due to white supremacy, due to white assimilation. And it's incredible to me that they're doing all of this in such a sophisticated way in a kid's show.
Yeah, 100%.
Although I will say, and I'm not saying that Tuba's a good guy because he's not, I will say that cuffing him at the end was a little dramatic.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like, okay, what are you gonna, like, what are you gonna do?
Like, they're not law enforcement. Like, they're not gonna. Where are they gonna put him? Him from stealing it.
Yeah.
Again, which I guess is good, but it seems a little dramatic. I don't know.
What are they gonna do? What are they gonna do other than send him on his way? What can they do? Keep him in the basement of the ship? Keep him in the hold forever?
Just lock up there.
That was a little. I don't know. That was a little dramatic, but hey.
Yeah.
You know. It is what it is.
They needed some way to show that they beat him, and that was an easy visual cue.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah. Overall, Jacob, what do you think about these shorts from Young Jedi Adventures, episodes 9 and 12?
I think these were definitely the best batch so far, in my opinion. I enjoyed these. I thought The Princess and the Jedi was very nice. Kai's Bad Day, they packed a lot. They packed a lot into that time slot. I'm not going to lie. That was a real roller coaster. Off the Rails, obviously, as well, was phenomenal. I think what we saw from Tabor and Kai hashing out some of their differences, getting it all out in the open, I thought that was really cool. Thieves of Tharnaka, I didn't like quite as much. I just thought that beyond the main idea, I think execution-wise, it just wasn't quite as interesting, but obviously it still has its merits, as we discussed. I would say my favorite was probably between Off the Rails and Kai's Bad Day. Princess and the Jedi, maybe up there as well. Thieves of Tharnaka, a little bit behind.
Yeah, I really like this episode as well. All these four as well. I think The Princess and the Jedi is the one that stands out to me least. But I love Kai's Bad Day because of Tatooine stuff, Off the Rails because of Tabor Redemption stuff, and Thieves of Tharnaka because of colonization-themed stuff. And I'm really excited. We're about halfway through the season. Just a little under halfway through the season. We're now confidently, this is the second drop of Young Jedi Adventures episodes. We'll be continuing with the second drop in our next, in episode 132, which is not going to be next week. It's going to be 2 weeks from now, because next week we're doing a special episode. And then in 3 weeks, we'll get to drop 3. And then I think in about a month, we'll get to drop 4. And we'll finish up around May 4th, actually. We'll finish up around Star Wars Day. But yeah, because it's released in 4 drops of episodes. One, the first one on May 4th, the second one in, I believe the second one was in, like, October or something like that. Or was it September or something like that, August maybe. Then the third one was in November, and then the fourth one was just about a month and a half ago in early February. But yeah, I'm excited to continue with this. That's going to be it for this episode of Star Wars and the Galaxy. In the meantime, you can listen to us on all platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. I can no longer say Google Podcasts because they have shut down by the time this episode is released. RIP Google Podcasts. Breaker, a flash from the past, we'll say Breaker. Listen to us on Breaker. That literally just popped in my head like 5 seconds ago. Anyway, you can follow us everywhere at In a Galaxy Pod. You can find me at my link tree, linktr.ee/_ochifan327. Yeah, next week. I'm excited, Jacob. I'm so excited. We do this every year. It's an annual tradition for Star Wars In a Galaxy. And this year is going to be no different. The tier lists are back, baby.
The tier lists are back.
The tier lists are back. We're going to do some more tier lists. Very excited for that. And then we'll, of course, go on with Young Jedi Adventures the week after. But in the meantime, I think all there's left to say is may the Force be with you.
Always.
Always.